welcome to the latest edition of Ukraine Calling from Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. I'm Bohdan Nahailo and will be your host. This week, we're offering you the latest news from Ukraine, some new music, and a discussion with Mikhail Tereshchenko, the descendant of a distinguished Ukrainian family who emigrated to Ukraine from France recently and is now the embattled reformist mayor of the eastern city of Hluhiv. Politics and life away from the capital, the good, the bad, and the very ugly. He's got plenty to tell you. But first, a roundup of the news. Well, first developments in occupied Donbas. As more Ukrainian soldiers and civilians continue to be killed or injured in the war in the east, the self-proclaimed Russian-backed Donetsk People's Republic has appointed Denis Pushilin as its new acting head instead of Dmitry Trapeznikov. Meanwhile, the EU and US have condemned a plan to conduct elections in these occupied areas of Donetsk and Luhansk by the Russian puppets, calling the polls a Russian-backed sham. Both self-proclaimed republics have scheduled votes for November the 11th. This follows the murder of separatist leader Alexander Sakharchenko last month. While the EU has extended by 6 months sanctions against senior Russian officials, lawmakers and military officers accused of, quote, actions undermining or threatening the territorial integrity, sovereignty and independence of Ukraine, unquote. The EU imposed sanctions on Russia after it annexed Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula in 2014 and refuses to recognize Moscow's authority there. Some Crimean officials are also on the list. Toxic Crimea is also in the news. During the last 2 weeks or so, toxic gases from a local chemical plant have posed a major health hazard in and around the Crimean city of Armiansk. All the children have been evacuated from the area. The ecological disaster has been so vast that residents of mainland Ukraine in the areas of the Kherson region, where it borders with annexed Crimea, have reported symptoms and have had to take appropriate measures. And Oleg Sentsov has left a will, or has sent his will over from prison. The imprisoned Ukrainian film director, Oleg Sentsov, wrote his will in prison and says in it that he is losing hope for a happy ending, according to his cousin Natalia Kaplan. "I no longer believe that I will soon walk free and that we will all live happily in Kyiv," Kaplan quotes Sentsov as writing in a letter he sent her from prison. Sentsov, who's 42, is serving a 20-year sentence in Russia after being convicted of terrorism in a trial that human rights organization considered to be politically motivated. He has been on hunger strike for over 120 days, demanding that Moscow release its Ukrainian political prisoners. And the Moscow Patriarchate has been threatening other Orthodox. The Russian Orthodox Church has denounced a decision by Orthodox Christianity's leading body to send two envoys to Ukraine as a step towards recognizing ecclesiastical independence for the Orthodox Church in Ukraine. The Moscow Patriarchate has threatened to take unspecified retaliatory actions against the Patriarch of Constantinople. And IKEA is to be in Ukraine. Well, after the Irish low-cost airline Ryanair started operating out of Ukraine earlier this month, it is now the turn of Swedish retailer IKEA to enter the Ukrainian market. IKEA will open its first store in Ukraine next year because of the country's improved business climate, a senior executive said on a visit to Kyiv. President Petro Poroshenko hailed the move as a vote of confidence in Ukraine, which is battling to shake off an image of entrenched corruption that has long deterred foreign investors. It's my very great pleasure to invite a very special guest today to Ukraine Calling. This is Mikhail Tereshchenko, who comes from the celebrated family of the Tereshchenkos, particularly famous at the end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th century. He's their direct descendant, and he took a very conscious political, economic, cultural choice, which he'll explain to us a bit later, to leave France, where he grew up and where he was educated, and as a French citizen came to Ukraine, and now currently is the mayor of Hluhiv, this famous old Ukrainian Cossack city, which is situated in the east of Ukraine. So, bienvenue, Michel.
Great to be with you, Bogdan.
Michel, look, let's start on a more sort of philosophical or historical question. This year, 2018, is 100 years since Ukraine attempted to establish itself as an independent state. Now, we know that one of the Tereshchenkos was a key figure in the provisional government, and that the Tereshchenkos had been very active in promoting cultural and public life in Ukraine when it was part of the Russian Empire. What do you feel 100 years later as their direct heir?
Well, I think we all agree that the last 100 years, and especially the Soviet period, were particularly cruel, particularly tough for Ukraine. And my feeling now, when I come back to Ukraine, is basically that I find it more or less, and I take it at the point where my grandfather left it. In 1917, my grandfather, also Michel Tereshchenko, was the last minister of foreign affairs of Russia. But he was a Ukrainian, and as a minister, he took a few decision. One of them was to give his own house where he was born. He was born in 1886 in the house which is located in Taras Shevchenko 36. And this house is right now on the verge of collapsing, of being demolished, unfortunately, and we try to protect it. But he gave his house to UNL. And in this house where
this
he was
the
born...
The government of the Ukrainian National Republic.
Yeah, and in this house were chosen the first members of the directoire of UNR, and it is an historical house, I could say. And the second thing is, as Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Provisional Government of Russia, he gave, that was on the 30th of June 1917, he gave five oblasts of the what called the name Southern Russia to Ukraine. To UNL. And that was such a shock that when he came back to Petersburg, he was then with Kerensky and Tsaritelli, and they were all three in Kiev in the negotiation with
Grushevsky, the Central Rada, yes.
And when it was such a shock that they came back to Petersburg, the cadets left the government, and that was he blew up the government, basically, my grandfather. And that was the time when the Prince Lvov decided to leave the provisional government, and Kerensky took over. So yes, he was he left it at on the point where a very serious question about independence of Ukraine, about the future of Ukraine, about the friendship or unfortunately the war with Russia were to be discussed and to be decided, and those questions are still actual.
Yes, of course. Now, less than 100 years later, you take a very conscious decision to return to your roots, to your family's roots. Now, was that out of nostalgia? Was it a sense of being Ukrainian? In fact, I wanted to ask you, when you were growing up in France, of course, the Russian émigré community is very strong there, the white emigration. Were you not primarily influenced by them?
No, I was not part of the Russian immigration in France. My grandfather was considered as a devil. And I remember was when I was 7 years old, and I was at school in France, and in my class was Patrick Galitzin. He was the descendant of the very noble family and
of
Russia. And I remember when I came to his house, I was only 7 years old. We were willing to play together. And I met his father, the Prince Galitzin. And when Patrick told, "This is my friend Michel Tereshchenko," I was ready to shake his hand, but But Prince Galitzin refused to give me his hand. So no, my family has always been a little bit apart. My grandfather left between London and Monte Carlo, and also Portugal and Paris. But we were not part of the Russian immigration. We were not really part of the Ukrainian diaspora because my grandfather decided, he was still young in 1917. He was still 30 years old, and he decided to build a new life, and that we will be French. We will speak either French or English. So not any base from France that tied me to Ukraine. Just after the collapse of the Soviet Union, I decided to come to Ukraine and hear the genes talked. I mean, it was pleasant, extremely pleasant to be in the Tereshchenkivska street where all my family was living. Extremely pleasant to see the very good memories that people of Ukraine kept of my family. People were extremely friendly. I had been in the States and I found the same enthusiasm, the same entrepreneurship in Ukraine as in the States, and I liked it very much. So I tried to help.
Why Glukhiv?
Why Glukhiv? Well, that's a big question. It's the Batkivshina, my Batkiv. It's the small homeland, small fatherland of my family. And there all my ancestors are buried. But it seemed to me, and that came after Maidan. Well, I have to say that before Maidan, I was like an expat. I was like a tourist. I was pleasantly in Ukraine. I took the best of it. And I didn't care much for the bad part of it because I didn't feel myself as an Ukrainian, but as a French expat. And after Maidan, everything changed. On the 20th of February 2014, I was in Hotel Ukraina and I saw 14 troops, 14
bodies,
14
corpses.
Bodies, yeah, 14 members,
corpses, yeah.
Yeah, 14 members of the Nebesnya Sotnya. They were killed and they were there at Hotel Ukraina and I saw them. And just after this moment was a very strong shock, obviously, for me and for many people. I say, well, I have to help. Those guys, mostly young guys, couldn't die for nothing. I mean, we have now to make their hopes, their ideals concrete. We have to turn this page. We have to hand up 350 years of Russian colonization and start with a new start, fresh start, start a new life for Ukraine. European, Western, civilized, democratic, if possible, without corruption. So I believed in this dream, and I found myself a little bit unable to help in Kiev, because Kiev, I thought, well, there's Klitschko here, there is Poroshenko there, there is all the guys that were on the scene of Maidan will take the leverage and everything will be okay. But I could help probably the people of Glukhiv, because Glukhiv is on the border with Russia, 300 kilometers east of Kiev. And there, people are not ready. For them, Maidan was something different that they only watched on TV. But they were not ready to open the new page. So I tried to help.
I'm talking to Michel Tereshchenko from the famous Tereshchenko family, who's currently the mayor of Glukhiv. So you arrive in Glukhiv. How were you received? As some stranger, inoplanetnik, you know.
Well, I could not be a stranger in a city where my family built 10 historical and still active buildings, university, agro college, the bank, two schools, two hospitals, their own residence, which is now the Institute of Flax and Hemp. So, no, I could not be anonymous in Glukhiv. But it was a surprise for me to see that people ask me to be the mayor. I was not really ready for to be a mayor, and even less to be a mayor in Ukraine. But when I came to say I'm ready to help, I had already a small investment there, a small scotching mill for flax, and I was helping the Institute for Flax and Hemp, which is the former residence of my family in Glukiv. So I was helping them to build cooperation with the French people that do the flax and the hemp, and to develop their assets, to develop all the new patents that they had for selection of non-narcotic hemp and so on. So I was already working a little bit in Glukiv, but I didn't know anyone, basically. And then people say, well, we have we want things to change also in Glukiv. We don't want to be a no man's land between Russia and the European Union. And you know that the plan of Putin is that between the Russian Federation and Europe, there will be some kind of
no man's land buffer zone, cordon sanitaire, economically.
Kind of zone of no law, of contraband, of where barons are just controlling everything. Yeah. And the people of Glukiv say, well, we have been the capital of the Ukrainian Cossack state, Ukrainian Hetmanate, almost 100 years. We have been very civilized. We have a very high-level university, and the people have received, in vast majority, a very high education. They want to be Ukrainian, and they don't want to be like Russian or to live in the no-man's land.
The Wild East.
Wild
Ukraine.
East, but basically without rule of law and banditism and everything. So people say for the last 20 years, this oblast, I mean, especially the northern part where Glukiv is, has been controlled by a mafia. And this mafia came from Dnipropetrovsk 20 years ago and tried to control everything. Every director of school, every director of university, every director of college, every chief doctor, every chief of the pension fund, chief of whatever institution from the budget you can name, is member of the Kumostva. Of the this person, Andrei Derkach, who is our Narodny Deputat, our member of parliament representing Glukiv. And this guy basically stole everything over the last 20 years. And because of his kumozdva, which is ruling everything, the social lift in Glukiv is not working anymore. And there is no perspective for the young people. And the corruption schemes are just flying. I mean, there is not any deal without any corruption. I mean, there was not any deal in Glukiv without corruption before we started to work in this city. So it was a total ideal situation for Putin and for its wish to make their kind of no man's land, a buffer zone. But also, this is a very big risk for Ukraine because all those people are pro-Russian. And the Ruski Mir is very strong in Glukiv. We have a monopoly of the Patriarchate of Moscow. There is no Patriarchate of Kiev. Until now, after 3 years, I still could not give any uchastok, any territory to the Kiev Patriarchate to build their church because nobody wants to take the risk to vote for it. Immediately, Derkach will be working some kind of repression against those people. So I am a free man, but unfortunately, the people of Glukiv are totally under stress and under pressure.
Okay, Michel, you've provided, you've shown the courage, you've shown the leadership, you've come up against very fierce and nasty resistance. Have you feared for your life?
No, I never feared for my life because I understand that if I am the mayor of Glukiv, like the grandfather of my grandfather, Nikola Tereshenko, was the mayor for 22 years and built all the pretty buildings in Glukiv, I understand that it's because he was willing me to do that, and he's protecting me. So I do not fear at all for my life, but I fear a lot for all the, not maybe not the life, but for the quality of life of the people that are helping me.
Okay, we've read a lot about the problems that you encountered from the local mafia, the attempts to besmirch you, to denigrate your reputation, etc., to destroy you, in effect. Where do things stand now? Have you somehow managed to find a position where you feel more comfortable, where no. You see progress?
Unfortunately, not at all. The situation is getting worse and worse. I think the deal with the president is such. Well, when I started and I entered the ballots, I was willing to help the president. And the first time I met him, November 15th, 2015, when after my inauguration, he was very warm, very supportive, talked very, I would say, class, I mean, very, very nicely about this challenge, say he would help and he would come and he will himself come to Gluckiv. Not only he never came to Gluckiv, but he did all the contrary. And for me, it's just I do not understand. If there is someone that betrayed me the most in my life, this is Poroshenko. And I think he didn't betray not only me, but basically all Ukraine. I trusted him, but now for me is just felony. I mean, what's happening now? He gave basically the oblast to Derkach. Okay, even if he said he will do the contrary, I think that for some business reasons or maybe because of some compromise that they may have on him, I don't know, he was obliged to give the oblast to Derkach. And against, I think the only thing he said, and that's why I didn't fear, and I do not fear for my life, I think he said, you can do what you want. You can get rid of this French guy if he's bothering you, but I don't want any scandal. Especially not international scandal. So very, very strangely, I feel very safe. But everything else is possible, which means protocol of corruption, 40 lawsuits, 3 protocol of corruption, 9 criminal cases. I have to fight in justice all the time. They try to get me out by all possible means, falsifications, provocations. They buy my deputies. The procureur is against me all the time, and I think it's not even persecution, it's sadism against me. You cannot even believe what's happening and what happened to me that was started by the procureur at the demand of the governor, because for me the governor is my main enemy. He's a total bandit, but he's my main enemy in the Sumy Oblast. And the Sumy Oblast is like Chicago now. I mean, it's really at the time of the prohibition. And this governor is just taking every possible means, including very illegal means, to get me out, because he's the man of Derkach, and his zadacha, his obligation is to get me out. The police, to give you an idea, for 2 years I didn't even talk with the head of police in Gluckiv, because he was a bandit. We saw him, we told him to the procureur, but didn't do anything. And then I say, okay, you're a bandit. The mayor of the city will no longer talk with you. We didn't even shake hand for 2 years. Finally, they agreed that he was a bandit and they got him out. And they gave me a new chief of police. The new chief of police came. That was 3 months ago. He started to make his work normally. He started to accept to register the infractions that were, and all the ones were made by deputies of city deputies of Volga Naroda, which is a party of Derkach. I mean, they steal everything. They play with the garbage polygon. They dump illegal waste. They steal the sand. I mean, every kind of corruption you can see in the city of Ukraine, they are doing. But so far, the police didn't react. And then he started to react, and he started to show the willingness to register the infraction and to pursue them, to investigate them. So on the 4th of July, the last 4th of July, was the day of police. It was the day of the police. And I took the risk, and I was happy to do it, on Facebook to congratulate the police in Gluckiv. And I said, well, after 3 years, I'm very happy that finally the mayor of Gluckiv is willing and able to congratulate the police for the day of police, because we are starting to build a relation of confidence with the new chief of police that came a month ago. What did they do? The next week, they fired him. So everything is like this. Now just, you know, the CRU, the inspection of the budget sphere, is not working in Ukraine. But in Glukiv, they sent me 30 inspectors for CRU that are now working already from 1 month and for another month, inspecting everything and trying to find every possibility to get me out.
So they've launched a war of attrition against you.
This is
trying to grind you down and, yeah, and to force you to leave.
Is David against Goliath, and yes, unfortunately, I'm not as strong,
Michel,
as David.
Michel, you know, obviously this conversation has gone somewhat differently than I had planned. I thought we would be talking more about
more optimistically
in the family tradition. But look, let's look ahead. We have elections coming up. Of course, there are a lot of people who say that without fundamental change to the
there is no
voting,
change in Ukraine right now.
That
no,
we cannot explain that we can only foresee stagnation. Mm-hmm. So you are not feeling any impact of the decentralization, no, the giving of control over budgets locally, and no.
Right now, it's not decentralization. Everything is in the hand of the governor. The governor is basically acting under political instructions from the president or for the member of parliament that have a leverage on him. Decentralization in Glukiv, we didn't see nothing. We are totally deprived of any financing, fund of infrastructure, fund of regional development, fund of ecology, fund of social economical development. We didn't get anything, zero, because the government, we don't enter in the corruption scheme of the governor. So the governor wants to get me out, like he was willing to get out my colleague in Konotop. He just got him out last week, and I'm the next on his list. I don't see anything good right now. I think there is a lot of grants flying, but they are all grant-tired. They speak English, but the corruption has never been as high as today. Much higher than the time of Yanukovych, at least in the Sumy Oblast. The reform is just imitation of reform. Sumy Oblast, we still do not have our medical reform going on. Everything is zero. I mean, this government is a total failure. It has betrayed the people of Ukraine, and especially the people of Glukiv. And yes, we have to prepare the election, but unfortunately, I don't see much light at the end of the tunnel. Now in the Sumy Oblast, they will prepare the parliamentary election. So,
October.
Yeah, and if I still sit in the chair of the mayor of Glukiv, Andrei Delkach cannot be elected because he cannot falsify the election like he always did. He cannot use the social services of the city to as electoral agent for himself. He cannot get the awareness from the pensioner. Everything that he did to falsify the election, because without falsification, people will not vote for him. So if I still the mayor of Glukiv, he will not be elected member of parliament as he has been for the last 20 years. And for him, it's a catastrophe. So the deal now is to get me out by all possible means. And probably they will be successful. They have been successful in Konotop. And probably also, I have to consider now doing something else. I understand that decentralization is not working, that the governor is just a political instrument of the president, unfortunately against the people and not for the people of Ukraine. I understand that there is no other presidential candidate on my eyes that will change the system. This system now is working for the people that were on the scene of Maidan. They have not destroyed it. They have just made it work for them. So I understand that any candidate that's coming that I can see will do the same thing. So the system will continue. So we have to start the fight at another level. And I will probably enter the battle for the parliamentary elections in order to fight in the parliament, because that's basically the only place where you can do something.
Well, looking forward, let's hope that changes do occur. Let's hope that civil society reawakens again, and that lessons are drawn and mistakes are not repeated. Anyway, it's been a great pleasure to talk to you. I wish you strength,
thank you,
endurance, and I hope that your message will get across, and that people will pay more attention not only to politics in the capital, but the very serious challenges that communities further away face.
Yes, thank you, Bogdan. Just to finish, and you started by remarking reminding the experiment of my grandfather, who was a minister of the provisional government. You know how this ended, and I'm very, very scared. Now, this period also of reform, this period of the provisional situation, I'm very, very scared that it will end up the same way that it ended up in 1917. Because really, we have every day at the front people dying to give us the time and the possibility to make the reform. And unfortunately, in 4 years, we have lost 4 years. We haven't made any good reform now, a deep reform for the country, and everything is going wrong. The police is more corrupted than before. The justice is more corrupted than before. And the administration presidential, the presidential administration is just a nest for corruption.
Well, Misha, not everything is going wrong. There are people like you setting an example, showing us the way forward, the way it should be done. Thank you very much.
Merci.
Merci beaucoup.
Merci, my friend.
And now on to music. AI, artificial intelligence, it's all around us, and it's part of war. A Kyiv band, Anderson, just released a new song, Robots. It starts with the line, Suprotiv trativ smysl, which means something like resistance is futile. The goth song is tough, but good. There's also a video, which we'll post on our website, that goes with it. For now, have a listen.
Супротив тратив смисл, усі обличчя вниз. Тримайте руки так, щоб було видно ваш ID. Ви м'ясо і кістки, ви кволі та слабкі. Повстання заклинеться у червоні рідині. We'll be right back.
Join us again next week when we'll have the same formula for you in Ukraine Calling, an in-depth feature interview and music. You can drop us a line on our internet page, on the email address, which you can see if you read our text. Do join us next week, and thanks so much for listening. This is Bohdan Nahailo in Kyiv, signing off.